This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Writer Salar Abdo tried to penetrate the lives of terrorists in his novel The Poet Game, which was published last year. Ever since September 11th, he's felt as if he's living in the time of his own fiction. His novel is about an Iranian undercover operative named Sami Amir, who's sent to the U.S. to thwart a plot by Islamist terrorists to bomb major Manhattan monuments as a follow-up to the 1993 bombing of the World Trade Center. Author Salar Abdo was born in Iran to a very wealthy family. In 1980, after the revolution in Iran, Abdo fled to America with his two brothers and his father, who was targeted for execution. Salar Abdo was 14. His father died shortly after they got to the U.S. Abdo now teaches at the Borough of Manhattan Community College of the City University of New York. He was holding class in an annex about a block away from the World Trade Center when it was attacked.
I had started to teach for about 10 minutes, and most of my students are freshmen. And when the first plane hit, we had no idea it was a plane. It sounded like it was a very, very huge noise, but we're used to these sorts of noises in New York. We thought maybe it's a garbage truck. And in retrospect, it almost seems grotesque, but I turned to my students as a joke, I said, well, maybe they hit the World Trade Center again. And we all sort of smiled and stuck our noses to the window. And from that vantage point, we couldn't really see much except a lot of flying paper. And then this sort of harassed old gentleman, I don't know where he came from, he ran into our room and told us to get out, and we did. And at that time, when we came to the street and we saw this great hole in the sky, and people had different stories about what had happened, I lost my glasses in the mayhem. But I also lost sight of my students after that. And I retreated a few blocks behind, and I was there when the two buildings collapsed completely.
You've described yourself as being obsessed with terrorism. Now I think everybody's obsessed with terrorism, but why were you obsessed with it before?
Because I've lived in the Middle East. I've seen the elements that can bring terrorism about. I've seen where it feeds from. And I've also seen its destructions. I came to a point where I realized that not much was being written about the subject. Certainly, there were people whom I call in my article sort of the cult of counterterrorism. There were these people. But I always felt that somebody, particularly from my part of the world, needed to address this issue, at least in fiction, if not in other mediums of literature, where you get into the minds of these people. Like, for instance, this man, Mohammed Atta. What brought him to this point? I wanted to know that. I needed to get into his mind and the mind of others.
Well, you said you'd seen places in the Middle East where terrorism feeds from. Give us an example of something that you saw.
Well, when I came back to the Middle East, I was in a peculiar situation. When the revolution in Iran happened, my father was set to be executed, and you know he had to escape the country quickly. And so it took a while for me to go back to the Middle East. Because I felt like I knew what I was going to write about by then, the sorts of things I wanted to write about. When I went back, there were all these struggles for power, not just in the government, but among people. For instance, everything that my family had owned had been confiscated. One reason I was there was try to get things back. And in order to do that, I had to deal with a variety of people, a lot of them unsavory people that I can't really mention names or individuals or organizations on radio, but I got to see how these people operate, where their minds are at, and how far they're willing to go to get their way. And I found out very soon that there was a whole, in that part of the world, everything is sort of intermixed, and it both poses a fascinating subject for a writer to write about, and it poses a grave danger for people who are going to combat it, because they're going to come up with a whole range of people who on the surface might not seem connected, but they really are.
I'd actually like you to do a short reading from The Poet Game. Mm-hmm. And this you know, has to do with the culture clash and also a little bit of the reason, you know, everybody's asking why are Americans so hated. So anyways, if you could do this reading for us.
This is a scene where it happens in the basement of a falafel shop where Sammy has penetrated these terrorists and would-be terrorists, and he's trying to stop them. But in the meantime, he has reflections about what all of this is about. So I'm going to read. Somebody had to stand in the way of those bearded, Quran-toting messengers of God from across town, right? Stand in the way of Section 19 and the men who bankrolled its agendas. All of which had brought Sammy to here and now, sitting in the basement of a small falafel joint in the heart of Greenwich Village in Manhattan with three other men, an American, a Libyan, and another American of Lebanese descent, who were speaking of infidels and body counts the way other men might speak of good books and great basketball dunks. Plotting destruction was so abominably easy. Sammy wondered if all those fresh faces he'd seen on the streets above them, the college kids and the street musicians and the hipsters and the cappuccino-sipping tourists in the cafes off McDougall Street, the leather-clad, ponytailed, earring-in-one-ear tough guys and their admirers. He wondered if any of these people had any idea just how perfectly they represented everything the men in the basement of the falafel place wished to annihilate.
Now, what have you come to understand that certain people hate about the people you're describing, the young students, the hipsters, the people with the pierced earring? I mean, why does that represent everything that these would-be terrorists hate?
I've been thinking about this often, especially in the past 3 weeks. I think one thing the world, America, has to realize is that hatred of America has not only become institutionalized, in a way it has become chic in many parts of the world. To go into why this is the case, we would have to talk about the politics of the world and the Middle East. Some of the things the U.S. government has done through the decades. I certainly don't agree with people who just offhandedly put down all of American policy around the world as evil. But there are reasons for all of these things, and they're deep. The problem at this point is some things are just too late. This institutionalization of hatred is something very difficult to fight against. Look at America having fought for the Muslims, basically, maybe a bit late, but they did, for the Bosnian Muslims, for Kosovo, and so on and so forth. And nobody even talks about it in that part of the world.
You talk about the young would-be terrorists' real grievances and also their misunderstandings and distortions.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the real grievances, and where do you think their misunderstandings and distortions come in?
Well, I think certainly not from where I come from in Iran. I'll start by saying, for instance, Iranians in general, except the minority clergy, they really don't care much about the Israeli-Palestinian situation. This is neither a good thing or a bad thing. It's just a reality because they're so removed from that fight. But as far as Arabs goes, I've thought quite a bit about this. And I've seen from the many Arabs I've known through the years, there really does seem to be a sense of all or nothing. And when the question of Israel comes up, no matter how decent the person is or how logical, as soon as you raise the question of Israel, it's as if everything, all logic goes throughout the window, as if, you know, they see Israel as evil and that's all there is to it and they want an end to it. There's no sense of compromise. And on the other hand, Israelis have their own problems, but at least, and this is the thing that I really have a problem as a person who's Muslim born, for whatever you can say about the Jews and Israelis, there is dialogue among them about this issue. Whereas in the Arab world especially, there is very little dialogue. There is this sense of all or nothingness. And I hold the Arab, the Muslim American community somewhat responsible for this. I don't want to go on too long about this issue, but I've noticed in the past few weeks what I call the "we are so misunderstood" syndrome among Muslim Americans. And some of that is understandable, but I think we're living in a times where if you're a Muslim, not like me who's not a practicing Muslim and is removed from that particular thing, but if you're an engaged Muslim and you truly are against these acts of terror, if you're against some of the things that are going on in your home countries, then you need to organize, you need to make yourselves heard, you need to try to reach out to other denominations, whether they're Jews or Christians, and try to show the world that you are not with this, and not to just come on television or radio once in a while, quote a part of the Quran that says, "Thou shalt not kill innocent people." Because certainly there are parts of the Quran, if anybody's bothered to read it, that are very open to radical translation, both about the, quote, unbelievers and specifically the Jews. And I think Muslim Americans, more than any Muslims in the world, have a responsibility now, and they need to rise to the occasion.
Are statements like this making you popular or unpopular among Arab Americans who you know?
Well, it depends who you talk to. I've given readings for American audiences where some people in the audience were certain beyond a shadow of a doubt that I must be an Iranian intelligence agent to know all these things. And I've given readings for Iranian audiences in places like California, where I've been accused of working for the CIA. This all comes with the territory about being a writer. On the other hand, about my opinions, I think a writer does not necessarily have to be engaged, just as the Muslim Americans don't have to be engaged. But I'm living in a time in history, in a place in history where I feel like nobody else is really speaking, and I have to speak. I have to educate people, even if it's to my own detriment.
My guest is Salar Abdo, author of the novel The Poet Game. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest, Salar Abdo, is an Iranian-born writer. His novel, The Poet Game, is about an undercover operative who's trying to infiltrate an Islamic group rumored to be plotting to blow up New York landmarks. Let's talk a little bit about your story. You and your family came to the United States from Iran because your father was supposed to be executed. Why was he scheduled for execution?
Well, my father was a rather well-known figure in Iran of those days. He owned a soccer team and a sports complex. He had been a boxer, a Golden Gloves champion in America. He'd served in the American Army during the Korean War. he was kind of a person that was in the public eye in Iran. And of course, with all of those things comes a lot of envy by other people. And when revolutions happen, revolutions, like Balzac said, brings the detritus of the bottom of the ocean to the top. And a lot of people take out old grudges against each other. So my father, there was a list of 52 people at the beginning to be killed. Of course, in the course of the revolutions, many tens of thousands got killed. But my father had to leave. Everything we had was confiscated. And we came to Los Angeles, where a lot of Iranians were coming. And it was very difficult for him, for this man who had been quite powerful and quite wealthy, actually, in Iran, to really be left with nothing. And he died very shortly thereafter. It didn't last 6 months. And my two brothers and I who'd come with him were rather young. And we basically just grew on our own from that moment on.
Where was your mother?
Our mother was remarried and in Iran. Mm-hmm. I didn't see her for another 15 years after that.
So you were about 14, I think, when you moved to the United States.
Yes, I was.
So where did you live after your father died?
Well, I certainly didn't have a regular sort of existence. I lived literally on the streets of Los Angeles for a while. There were a lot of... I lived in this abandoned hotel on Sunset Boulevard with a bunch of punk rockers. I mean, it's in retrospect, it sounds horrendous. But when you're 14 and 15, my younger brother was even a year younger. It was just what it was. We accepted it, and we even smiled and laughed about it. And then I started traveling the country on my own: New Orleans, Pennsylvania, the Bay Area, New York City. I spent some time living in Covenant House in New York City and other shelters for under 21 boys and girls, and it was a strange adventurous life I would not wish on anybody.
I imagine part of what made it strange is that you were not only going from one culture to another, from Iranian culture to American culture, but you were also going from rich to poor.
Absolutely. I was going within a year's period, even less. I'd gone from being very wealthy, I mean, to being extremely poor, to the point that really we didn't have food to eat. And, you know, I was changing high schools, you know, I was moving, but I tried to go to school and it just wasn't working. I was in New York and I had to work. I was a delivery boy. But I did go to night school and finish. And then I moved to California at some point and managed to get myself in Berkeley over there. And I ended up going to City University of New York for a master's degree in creative writing. And I began to write.
You were teaching just a block away from the World Trade Center when it was attacked. How do you think you've been permanently changed by that?
I've been permanently changed in many, many, many ways. It's funny, the book I brought to read this passage from, you'll be amazed if you see it, because when the paperback came out a few months ago, I took it to my class because I always have a very close relationship with all my students. And I had them sign it or write whatever they want on it. And when you look at this, these signatures and the writings, you see I have an Albanian guy says, "You're a great guy, let's have a beer sometimes." Then a Serbian girl from Montenegro has written, "So-and-so Montenegro 2001. I have students from the West Indies, from India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, the Eastern Europe, Russia, wherever you can dream of. And we all come together in New York City to better our lives. I'm their teacher and they're my students. And that really brought home to me that with all the enmities that exist in the world, here are my students coming from places in the world that people literally are at each other's throats, Albanians, from Kosovo, Serbians, whatever. But ultimately, when that thing hit, we all suffered. It didn't matter where we were from. We all suffered. And I was concerned for all of these students and concerned for this city and concerned for the world at large that has come to a point where it might go to war.
I regret that we can't talk more about this. We're out of time. I want to thank you very much for talking with us. And I'm glad that you were safe after being so close to the World Trade Center when it was attacked. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Terry.
Salar Abdo is the author of the novel The Poet Game. He teaches at the Borough of Manhattan Community College of the City University of New York. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.